Move fast and break things. That's the motto of the tech bros financing the latest incarnation of a long-promised nuclear power renaissance. In the reckless race to fire up three newish reactors by next 4th of July, the things being broken include the norms of regulatory oversight, radiation exposure limits, environmental monitoring, and local democracy. And the enthusiasm is contagious, infecting the nuclear weapons industry no less. Greg Mello's recent dispatch for this podcast from the Nuclear Deterrence Summit laid it out. It's no longer about stockpile stewardship. It's now a production mindset to go fast with new warhead designs, faster plutonium pit production, and a clamoring for new underground nuclear tests. But consider this. President Richard Nixon promised 1,000 nuclear reactors by the end of the last century, while our protest and political engagement held the industry to just over 100. And there's no denying that global protest and mass nonviolent resistance helped to rein in the nuclear arms race for a couple of decades. To tell that story in numbers, here's just a few. In the 1980s alone, the Nuclear Resister chronicled well over 30,000 arrests for anti-nuclear civil disobedience in the United States at hundreds of sites across dozens of states. These protests ranged widely, from solitary prayer vigils atop missile silos to congressional office sit-ins, peace camps, occupations, and mass action blockades at reactor sites, bomb factories, military bases, and more. How did so many people organize to take such consequential action against the atom state? In short, we educated ourselves and each other about the issues, and we trained together in the evolving traditions of nonviolent direct action. We learned how to make democratic decisions and prepare for calculated risks in both small groups and large mass actions. People who joined the anti-nuclear movement in the 1970s or 1980s had watched on TV or were old enough to have taken part in the great social movements for civil rights and an end to the war in Vietnam. We had witnessed the power of nonviolent direct action to elevate a struggle for justice to a national, even a global spotlight, and to help achieve real victories. By the mid-1970s, commercial nuclear power was booming, hand in hand with the accelerating nuclear arms race. Both proved fertile ground for organizing and activism. An essential tool in every organizer's kit was the Action Handbook. Kate Donnelly of the New Jersey Sea Alliance wrote that in 1978, the Clamshell Alliance produced a handbook for a civil disobedience action at the yet-unbuilt Seabrook nuclear power plant in New Hampshire. In the following years, most major civil disobedience actions produced their own handbooks following the format of that first Clamshell one. Many of the same articles were used over and over, but each handbook committee made a few important changes to classic pieces, she wrote. These handbooks, ranging from a dozen stapled sheets to inexpensive newsprint booklets up to 100 pages long, typically began with an introduction to the local nuclear hazard and its relation to the global nuclear threat. Contents would also include a brief history of mass nonviolent action, descriptions and role-playing exercises about nonviolent responses to personal violence, agendas for trainings in nonviolent action, affinity group formation, and consensus decision-making as an exercise of direct democracy. Possible legal consequences were spelled out, while non-cooperation and jail solidarity were presented as viable, nonviolent options to ratchet up the resistance. The handbooks evolved to include sections on oppression and the importance of challenging the many isms like racism, sexism, ableism, classism that get in the way of working together for positive change. Today, you can find great resources for nonviolent action and training at warresisters.org, the online home of the War Resisters League. Earlier in this story, I referred to the Atom State. That's the title of a prescient 1977 German book by Robert Jungk. He argued that the widespread adoption of nuclear energy inherently threatens civil liberties and democratic institutions, leading to the creation of an authoritarian surveillance state. Sound familiar? It's been said that history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. We can't reconstruct the anti-nuclear movement of 40 years ago, but we can learn from it, build on our history, and rhyme for these times. The good news is that the tactics of nonviolent action, of direct democracy, of non-cooperation with illegitimate authority, all these things the anti-nuclear movement learned about, trained, and practiced years ago, are the same tactics available to us today to resist not only the new nukes, but every aspect of the authoritarian surveillance state in ascendancy today. This has been Jack Cohen Joppa for Nuclear Hot Seat, with examples from the Nuclear Resistor Archives for growing the activism we need today.